Welcome one, welcome all, Portal Gaming Podcast, episode number 33. In my experience, there is no such thing as luck. Welcome, step right up, everybody. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of The Portal, which is a store located in Manchester, Connecticut. For more information, you can log on to www.timemachineportal.com. You can check us out on Facebook, The Portal, and you can follow us on Twitter at PortalGaming60. Welcome, everybody. I am your host, The Brant, and with me, as always, is...
your co-host, Brian.
And I am feeling kind of sick here, Brian.
So I'll stay back a little bit?
Yeah, you should probably stay back. So sorry, actually my voice sounds pretty good right now, so it's not too bad, but...
Let them be the judge of that, right?
Yeah, that's true, coming through with the cold and everything. But we are here on Thanksgiving Eve, live at the store.
Yeah.
We're in the store recording this and just getting ready for a good turkey day and lots of things. And this is one of 2 days of the year that the store shuts down. Is that correct?
Typically. I mean, we've kind of cycled. Those are like Thanksgiving and Christmas are the two for sure, like that we're always closed. We've done a few other days, like depending on, you know, how the holidays fall. But you know, every now and then we'll do like Easter or like other events, but for the most part, it's Thanksgiving and Christmas for us.
There you go. So one of the 2 days, and then the mad rush begins, although I see things have already kind of been picking up with people shopping and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it's always, like this time of year is always like a lot of prep. I mean, it still is kind of, you know, the volume's increasing a little bit, but then once you hit Black Friday, it's really hectic that like initial weekend. You know, then it kind of levels out a little bit until it kind of keeps increasing up until Christmas.
Yeah, and don't forget for Small Business Saturday to come on out and check out the Time Machine and check out the Portal. Those are both great local places to support, as we are telling you, but, you know, continue to support us. So definitely find both those places. We'll be talking more about Time Machine Toy and Hobby later on in the podcast, so we'll get to that. Hey, we are a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. So we're glad to be there, and looks like we're headed to Dice Tower Con for sure this year. Tickets, we're still working on some lodging and some flight, but we'll be going to be down there. I'm hoping to run an event.
Oh, yeah.
And I threw that by Vassal, so that'll be exciting. So we'll be down there. It's our first time, so I'm looking forward to that. We'll talk more about that when we get to June,
yeah,
because that'll make a little more sense. And BGG Con just took place this last weekend. So
yeah, I'd love to get down there at some point, but yeah, probably not in the foreseeable
timing
future.
Is rough. You more than me probably would get down there. So awesome. Any other things on the docket before we get to announcements?
Not really. No.
All right.
So
upcoming event here, the Silk City Board Game Group meets as they do every month, and that will be Saturday, December 10th from 12 to 4:30 at the Manchester Public Library, and the Portal will be there supporting. Brian's always there. I'm there when I can make it, teaching games and playing games, pretty much kind of an adults-only thing, and they always have different games to show off. I don't actually know what those are for this month, so we'll get that out, but you can definitely check them out on Facebook as well, Silk City Board Game Group. Come on out. It's always a great time, great place, and Jen and Matt do a great job supporting that and as the library as well. So want to check that out. So let's move on to what's on your table. You ready?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm starting off?
Sure.
All right. So the one that I played most recently, I guess, was Brass from Eagle Griffin Games. And that was a game that you've been trying to get me to play for a while now.
Oh, yeah.
So it was one of those ones that was like put off, put off, put off, until we finally ended up getting it to the table the other night. Just a two-player game, and we got to, you know, I finally got to see what you were talking about this whole time. So Brass is this pretty heavy economic game where you're kind of building up all these different factories and, you know, what else, like coal mines and all this sort of stuff in, like, what's the era for it? Do you know offhand?
All that coal stuff is like late 1700s, yeah. Early 1800s.
So like kind of Industrial Revolution, yeah. In England.
Yeah, it's probably a little later, yeah.
More yeah, but like in that kind of vein. Yeah, that's true. But it's kind of like in that vein, so it's this map and you've got, you know, it's kind of empty. You start off and you're building up from different points. And it's card driven, so you've got different places that you can build based on the cards in your hand. You know, and there are a few other actions and whatnot, but... one of the really neat things about this game that I hadn't really seen in many other games is halfway through the game, it kind of resets, and all of a sudden it's a new era sort of thing. So it's kind of resetting the board, wiping clean all the, like, the obsolete plants and all, you know, all the obsolete buildings, stuff that's kind of aged a little too much. Mm. So it's kind of switching gears, and all of a sudden it's a very similar game, but at, like, a higher rate. So you've got, like, you know, everything is kind of building up to the point where now you're really trying to optimize what you're doing. You know, and you're really just looking at it to, you know, build these buildings and, you know, get income, because it's very tight on money. So, like you've said many times before, you're guaranteed that you're going to be taking out some loans in this game. Yeah. But I don't know. I really did enjoy Brass. I'm glad that I played it. I'd like to play with a few more people, yeah. You know, but two-player was really fun. I guess we should point out that we got a two-player board, so, like, it's separate. So the base game does not necessarily come with just a two-player map. And as you've been saying, like, it was really helpful to have, like, a specific map dedicated to two-player.
Absolutely, yeah.
So that's something that you'd have to do a little bit extra. Like, you'd have to buy that on the side, kind of like an add-on sort of thing. And we use poker chips instead of the money that's in the game. That that money in Brass isn't all that great. So there were a few things that we took and kind of took him to the next step. But I don't know. I guess I've only played a few Martin Wallace games, and this one's, you know, definitely at the top of the list after just the one play. I'd like to keep trying it out and see how it goes. But, you know, I'm glad I got it to the table.
You can, the two-player map, quote-unquote, is available on BGG, as well as the files, so you can just literally take cards out of the deck and cover the cities. So it's playable from the base box two-player, but yeah. It's not as finished. You have to kind of have all those rules, everything is kind of laid out, and on the two-player board it tells you how to adjust the game really easily for two players. So it's better. I'm so glad you got that board.
Yeah,
but it is playable. Yeah. You could do it from the regular game, but Brass is a great game. If you haven't tried it and you like heavy euros, in my mind, it's a must. Mm-hmm. There may be things that other people like better, because there's heavy euros that I don't like as much that other people really like. Different structure, but I love this one because it just has that, like, calculation of where am I going to spend my money and what's the right timing for this and
yeah.
All that.
So. And it starts off kind of as a clean slate, and it's really like, once you make one decision, it's kind of guiding you a little bit closer to getting to a specific end goal in mind. You know, like, it's really enjoyable at the end of the game where you're like, oh, if I had done this on, like, the first turn, it looks like I could have probably done this. Or, like, you know, when you get down to, like, those final couple actions in the game, and you're like, okay, now I really know, like, what my limitations are for what I can do, so I need to figure out, I need to do this, and this, and this, and this. You know. So, I really just liked it. Yeah. I want to play it again, so. Yeah. That's Brass from Eagle Griffin Games.
Nice. I got to play Dream Home, which is an Asmodee production. I don't know which branch of Asmodee, actually. Is it straight up Asmodee?
So, it was like, I don't know.
Bombix or something. Who knows? Yeah, I don't remember which one. So, Dream Home is a game where you're building your dream home. So essentially, it's a family-style card drafting game. There's two rows that come out, and one has a whole bunch of rooms, and the other has a whole bunch of kind of like extras. Like, there's people, like the home repairman and the interior decorator, and there's roofs that come out, like roof tiles. And basically, you put them out in two rows, and then you draft a column. You draft a set of two cards. And so players go around drafting their two cards, and you add the room to your house with a couple restrictions, like you have to build the lower floor before you can build up. And you're trying to, like, extend your room. So if you get three living rooms in a row, you score, like, 9 points. Whereas if you have two of them adjacent to each other, it's just 4 points. So the more you have, the more points. And then you're using those other cards as kind of extra pieces. You get the ruse to score bonus points at the end. You get the different people who can give you abilities, like at any time swap a room for another room that's on the board. And you just go around, you keep drafting till you get 12 rooms and fill up your house. And then you kind of total up your points at the end. There's fun little extras you can get, like a birdhouse that you can put in your living room to increase the price of your living room, or a whirlpool to put in your bathroom. And there's a couple fun thematic things, like if you have a fully functioning house, which is like a kitchen, a bathroom and a bedroom, you get bonus points because you could choose to not build those. Or if you have a bathroom on each floor, you get bonus points. So there's some neat little thematic things. I really wanted to try it so I could play it with my daughter, who's now 7. She just turned 7 this weekend. And I don't know that it worked on like, oh, Dad, look at this amazing house that I'm building. And I don't know that it worked for me like, ooh, this game has that depth of strategy. So it kind of fell in that no man's land of like, I don't know that it's for kids and I don't know that it's for strategy gamers. So I'm not sure where like kind of the sweet spot is. Like, because Zephyr could definitely play it. She didn't have any issues really playing it. I mean, a little bit with like, oh, I want to put this over here. Oh, but it'll score more there. Oh, okay, if you say so. She wasn't quite sure on the scoring. I didn't find huge amounts of depth to it, like I said. So it just kind of left me with that. Now, we did only play the two of us, so maybe playing more would create a little bit more. There is in the two-player, like, you remove a column before you start, so, like, the other player gets to, you know, kind of hate draft or whatever they call remove one first.
Wait, so how many options did you have when you were drafting? Like, how many options did the first player have? I think
we had three options. For the first player, and then the other person was left with two, and then the cards go away, and then you deal more out, and you take them away. So it was fun. It was by no means a bad game. It kind of, like, what it sets out to do, I guess it does. It was just so light, and it just, I don't know that, like I said, that she was so excited about the house she was building, so that thematic piece was neat. It was really just about card collection, you know, set collecting. Yeah. And, like I said, for me, it wasn't something I was like, oh, like, I mean, with her, Ticket to Ride is just perfect. Like, it just works. It's super fun for me. It's great for her. She gets it. So I just feel like I would still hold on to Ticket to Ride.
Right.
And I wouldn't necessarily pull out Dream Home, even though, you know, they're not really the same thematically or what's going, you know, whatever. One's card drafting. One, I guess, it's kind of card drafting. But, you know, just that type of game. She can handle Ticket to Ride. I think I'm running into that she's starting to handle bigger games. And I'm sometimes keep it at the simple because the time structure is still tough.
Right.
You know, anything under 30 minutes has to be a go, but she could handle things that would be an hour in that structure. So it's like kind of balancing those two. But anyway, that was Dream Home. Yeah. Check it out if it sounds interesting to you. I wouldn't call it a pass. I just wasn't like a major thumbs up.
I thought it was good for what it was.
No, there you go.
No, I mean, I played it 4-player. It felt like the major point of interaction was manipulating who was going to be the first to draft. You know, like, manipulating turn order was really the main crux of it that I, like, after one play, 4 players, it felt like that was the main thing that you could really try to, you know, try to game out. But, you know, a lot of times when there is a, like, rotating first player, you kind of see it where the person in last has to get it. Like, you know, like, the person that's going last is the one that's going to want to be taking that to rotate it. Like, you could almost stumble in being second place the whole game, like, second to draft the whole game, and you're in a much better spot than, like, the third or fourth. You know, like, because it's a little bit of a detriment to take the first player token, from what I remember. Like,
you only get one card for your house. You don't get, like, that bonus
So it's
card.
Not optimal unless there's such a huge gap between the first cards to pick and, like, the second. And, you know, like, there's only... It requires a pretty big gap, and I think that's a little tough, especially when it's like you're only making one choice on your turn.
Right.
You know, if it was kind of in the lines of like, yeah, I keep thinking of like Elysium, where it's like this back and forth, where it's like, I'm going to pick one card, you're going to pick one card, I'm going to pick one, you know, like, so it's that back and forth. I almost wanted more of that if it were going to be in a gamer sort of
multiple rounds sort of drafting with the same cards out or whatever.
Right, like, I could take this now, but I'm hoping it'll get around to, you know, there's none of that in this game. It's really like, all right, I'm going to pick this because it's here.
It's the best one.
And there really isn't a whole lot. I really enjoyed just, like, looking at the art and trying to, like, trying to see, like, what I could do to build my house. But, you know, even then, like, the house is a little limiting. It's like, what is it, like, 4 rooms on the first floor, 4 rooms on the second floor, or something
like that. And 2
in
the basement.
And 2 in the basement. Garage, I can't remember what it is. So, like, it's kind of limiting. It was fun, but I think I had more fun afterwards looking through, like, the different cards, seeing, like, all the art that they had fun with, you know. You know, there were some, like, cool little, like, Easter eggs in the game, too, so.
Yeah, the flying DeLoreans in there from Back to the Future.
And just, like, looking at, like, what's on the game shelf in the game room, you know, like, stuff like that. So, I enjoyed it. I wouldn't necessarily, like, you know, I wouldn't suggest bringing it out, but I wouldn't turn away, like, a game, especially if it's, like, the right crowd for it.
And it's 30 minutes. I don't know how long it took to go with four.
No, it was quick.
Maybe 40 minutes, right?
So.
Cool. But, Dream Home. Asmodee.
Yeah. So, the next one I want to talk about is a recent game that Stronghold Games brought over to the U.S., and that's City of Spies Estoril 1942, which is kind of a mouthful to say. Like,
yeah.
I guess City of Spies is just easier to kind of reference it. But it's a really neat area control game where you've got some tiles which are representing different spies, like, from different nationalities with, you know, some special abilities as well as, like, an inherent, like, power, like, influence value or something. So you're kind of going around placing these, like, putting these different spies in different sections of the board, which are kind of in quadrants. So there are, like, a few different tiles that go out where each one has, like, a new spy that you're trying to almost recruit. I think, I don't know what the thematic thing is. It feels you're kind of recruiting new spies. Yeah. So each tile has four different places on it. One of them is occupied by the spy that you're trying to recruit. And the other three places are spaces that you can send your spies to try to, at the end of the round, to try to recruit that new spy to your hand, basically. So you're doing that, and a lot of them you're placing, like, you know, face down, or you can kind of place them and then look at some that are adjacent, but it's got a lot of, like, that bluffing sort of thing, plus you're looking to really maximize what you're doing in the different sections, you know, so there are a few based on the number of players. I don't know exactly how it was, but I really did enjoy, like, the area control aspect of it, where it's like, okay, I'm going to go here, and this assassin is going to be able to take care of anything that comes in a future place on my tile. And now we kind of go around, and as soon as everyone's placed the number of spies that they're doing for the round, then you kind of resolve in a set order. It's a little easier to just kind of go through. Like, I feel like once you play around, you really get a better sense of what's going on. And I don't feel like I've given the best explanation for it, but it's really, like, is really the basic crux of it is you're putting spies out to different sections of the map to try to gain, to have the most influence there, recruit more spies, and really focus on a couple different goals where you're getting points for the end game. So maybe you want to have the most, like, the most different nationalities amongst the spies that you have left over. So, I don't know. I thought City of Spies was a really good game. I guess I've been liking most of the Stronghold games that have been coming over to the U.S. So I don't think this was your favorite, but I don't want to put words in your mouth for that. Like, it seems like it's more up my alley anyway than yours, but...
Yeah, so this... I mean, this is that classic example of a game where I would not say, oh, this is a bad game or poor design. Mm-hmm. This is, like, classically not my wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. Like, this is that area control that I just really struggle with. Because it's like, okay, I have to put this here to predict what they're going to do and what they're going to do and what they're going to do, like, in four player. And then now I have to make my next move, and then I have to, like, reassess that whole thing. And I think sometimes I want to think too quickly. I don't want to sit there all day and go through, like, okay, what could all the possibilities be that everybody's doing, and trying to read the other players, which I don't think I'm super good at to begin with. And so it has that, and then it's that whole, like, flow chart of, like, okay, this will happen, then this will happen, then this will happen, where you make one mistake and it's totally unforgiving. You make that one mistake and then you get nothing. So it just feels very all or nothing. I don't know that a catch-up mechanism, like, because there were multiple rounds where I didn't get any spies. And then it just was completely behind the eight ball because a lot of these spies are better than the ones you have and work towards the end game goals. So... Yeah, like I said, I don't know what you would do, because if you just said, oh, if you didn't get any, then you get to draw one off the deck, could be really powerful, because you could get one. I don't know if there'd just be some, like, oh, you get one point. Mm-hmm. Which, again, the game is not very long, so that whole, like, catch-up mechanic, but, I mean, by the fourth round, I was like, I don't care at all. I'm so far behind. All I was trying to do was, like, oh, let me see if I can catch somebody else up to the leader. So I was kind of playing Kingmaker, or whatever that's called. I think Kingmaker is if you're making the first person high, but, like, you're picking who wins. Like, let me try to do that. And that's just never, not really a fun place to be for me, which I guess I could have just avoided by putting stuff down. So Yeah, it's just tough for me. I just don't do well with that whole, like, area control where I have to predict what the other players are going to do in future moves and then have another move, and then eventually there's a scoring. This scoring was a little more predictable as to when it happens, as opposed to like an El Grande or some of those other ones where I struggle with, where it's kind of like, when will that Royals have that? When will this randomly kind of come up?
Yeah.
The deck runs out. Will that person draw out the deck? Where I struggle with those a little bit more. So I really like area control. Dudes on a Map, I love. Mm-hmm. Everybody seems to put those two together, like area control fighting. Like, no, if I have seven people and I move them into your place with three and pound on you because there's a fight, that's not area control to me. It's that literal, like, I place one, you place one. That middle ground for me was more Tyrants of the Underdark, where it was like, oh my gosh, am I trying to knock out your spaces you own two turns into a 50-turn game? Like, how beneficial is that to me? So that wasn't so bad, and the things you took weren't so vital.
Mm-hmm.
But this game was literally all or nothing. I either win that spy when I put two there, or I just made a wrong move, and now,
right,
like, both spaces go down. So the only time I won stuff was, I think I was a little whiny, so people left me alone. And then I won, like, two in one round, because it was like, well, we better let them have something, which I totally apologize. I hate to get to that point, but sometimes I do.
Yeah, and I'm going to be the opposite of, like, I don't want the, like, the dudes on the map sort of thing. Like,
yeah.
That's not my stuff. So it's, yeah, I guess it depends on where you're coming from with your gaming tastes. But, you know, I really did like it. I'd recommend it. And it's, like Branch said, it's really quick. And, yeah. That's City of Spies, Estoril, 1942, from Stronghold Games.
Sorry. If you tend to agree with Brian, then you probably will like that game. So, there you go. Last up for me is Inish by Madigo. So, I got to play this yesterday at the board game group at school. So, we played a three-player game of this. So, Inish, kind of big box, dudes on a map style game. Really light for this structure, though. I mean,
like,
it's a super
area
light
control
game. No, this is area control. No, actually it is, because it's not full-on fighting. No, it's definitely area control. Very clear on what those things are, though. So it's about 60 minutes. So people have compared it to Cry Havoc, Kemet, I don't know what, you know, Blood Rage, all these other ones. I feel like Blood Rage is mostly in the vein for this one. Kemet feels different to me. Cry Havoc feels very different to me with the asymmetric powers. You don't have asymmetric powers in this. So you're clashing for control of the Scottish Highlands, as far as I can tell, or Irish lands. And so basically the whole game is just around as you draft these cards. So in a three-player game, there's 13 cards. One comes out. You deal four to everybody. You keep one, you pass. You keep two, you pass. The only difference is you can pass the stuff you previously kept. So if you decide, oh, I'd rather have these, you could do that. And then everybody plays these action cards. And it's like the same 13 cards every time. So eventually, you really know those cards. Like, you know the things that everybody could have. Like, it's not, oh, will that card be out? There's only one card that's not out. And the cards do things like recruit two new clan members. So you put two new dudes on the map. Or, you know, place a new tile. They're these kind of big tiles. They're really interesting shaped. And you put a new tile out, and you get to put one person, so you've explored that area. Each tile then has a card associated with it. So if you area control that region, then you get that special advantage card to put in your hand to use as a card with various abilities. Usually there are things like, when you play a card, immediately play this to add one new clan member to the map or something like that. And then you're just playing these cards. Some of them have movement eventually, and movement will say, you know, move into an area, and then you start a clash. So a clash is a fight, but it's very interesting. First off, in a clash, everybody can just negotiate and agree to, there's no fighting. It's just, I moved in, and nothing happens. Or you can have a clash, and the person could say, okay, I'm attacking you, because there could be multiple people. And so green decides to attack white. So white now either has to remove a clan member or discard an action card from their hand. So they're either lessening the number of actions they get that round or losing somebody. And then they would get a turn to go, and it just goes around with everybody who's in that space. And at any point, somebody can say, let's stop there. Okay. Now you might be wondering, well, why would you stop? Don't you want control? Blah, 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 blah. Well, the victory conditions for the game are control six. So you either have to control six other clans. So you control a region or multiple regions where there's a total of six other clans in those regions. So if somebody stops and they have less, they're basically giving you victory points. Or there are settlements that can get placed. So there's cards that say, like, place a settlement and then draw one of these other cards. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Some of the tiles just put settlements out as they come out. So if you control six of those settlements, regions with those settlements, and there can be multiple in a region, you win. Or if you just straight up control six different regions, you win. There's also citadels, and a citadel is protection. So when a clash starts, it kind of goes around the table, and everybody can put one unit in the, there could be a single unit in any one citadel. So if there's two in a region, the first two people will get that option, and the last person won't. And they're protected. They're not in the clash.
Are you not obligated to say citadels any other way?
Or... I'm not.
Okay.
If Eric Summer was on the podcast, he might have to. So anyway, that's what happens then at the end of the round once everybody passes. So you could pass and wait, and then it's pass, 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 and three-player, and the round's over. Whoever controls like the main region becomes the Bren, and then you check for if anybody has victory. One of the actions you do have to take for victory is you have to become a pretender. So your action is, I think I'm going to win this round. And then at the end of the round, if you've said that, you can claim victory if you have at least one victory condition. But if you have one and somebody else has one, then it's a tie. So you have two people both have victory, then it's a tie, and that doesn't go anywhere unless one person's a Bren. But you could have two victory conditions, and then you'd be able to win. So you just keep going. It's really, really tight. Like, you're constantly going, whoa, we got to stop them. They're about to, oh, they could sneak in and win here, and... I'm not sure about that, like, last action syndrome. Like, could you kind of delay, and then have the last actions take over? I mean, in any of these games, that works that way. Okay, so here the area control is very, very clear. Like, I can't really predict what other people are going to do, but I can kind of protect certain regions. I just did, like, the spread out thing, which didn't really benefit other people. And you know those cards. So there's really nothing up anybody's sleeve. You're like, well, at most, they're going to be able to move all those units, or they're going to be able to draft or whatever. There's also these epic tail cards. That's the only place where it's different. There's like a set of red cards that you can draw from, and they give like once per game abilities. You discard them and you can use those. So that would be kind of the ace up your sleeve. They still didn't seem ultimately powerful, but they were pretty good. Like, you know, immediately end a clash. So you just defend a territory and don't let anybody kill your units kind of thing. And then you can move them out. It was pretty neat. When I looked at it, I was like, oh, I don't know. I don't know if this has to be my game. It was pretty fun. It doesn't look fun two-player. It just looks too bland, but they've got a whole different drafting system, so, I mean, you may have to try it. But it was really fun with three, and I wouldn't be surprised before. I think the part I really liked was that it was 60 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's just not that complicated. The cards have a bunch of text on it, but by the second time you're seeing a card, it totally makes sense. You're not that thrown off. Light. I mean, I don't even know if this is a medium game. Probably to the normal kind of casual gamer, it's a medium game. But to us, it's light. I mean, it falls in that difficulty of like Isle of Skye and all that kind of stuff, you know. But I liked it more than I expected to like it. I didn't know. But it was interesting. The people I was playing with, much more Ameritrash-style gamers, lots of dice rolling, all that stuff. And the combats were just so foreign to them. Like, why? Gotcha. Why would I not roll anything? And why would I, like, why am I not attacking? What else would I do? Your other option is to withdraw. So actually, you could just retreat a unit. So there's that option there. So that's what you do sometimes. Just take a hit and then retreat one. Take a hit, retreat one, and then you move your unit out and just give them that space. So it was pretty neat. It's worth a play.
Did you play with students or with like
one adult, one student, and myself?
Okay.
So and the student totally handled it. It was fine, you know. In fact, he ended up winning.
Oh, nice.
So,
like, it almost seems like the end game, like that. I guess maybe that balancing act sounds kind of similar to Cyclades. I don't know if that's.
Yeah, it's got that element
where it's kind of like anyone could kind of, you know, take it at a certain point.
Yeah, I feel like though Cyclades is almost like you could steal a win.
Yeah.
And that's definitely smart play. There's layers above, like on Cyclades, that make it more advanced, right? And that bidding is a big deal. This one's almost like you can sneak a win. Like you were thinking ahead, and other people just couldn't, you know, they just couldn't see all the iterations that you could see for them. So, like I said, it's really tight because it's just like one thing just switches things over. And so I think that's where like the Euro gamer would really like it, that it's tight in that sense. Okay. So. I think you should give it a play.
Yeah.
I think you would like it more than you would think.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have picked it up if I thought it was closer to, like, the Kemet right. style. You know, like, I was a little concerned, and then I watched some of the, like, the reviews that were out there, like, Shut Up and Sit Down, I watched that, and they were giving it glowing reviews, so it was kind of more in the line of, like, all right, this sounds a little bit better, a little bit more up my alley, and then I think they said that you don't even have to fight, and I was like, I'm sold.
Yeah, people might fight you, so there might right. be that element. Yeah, and fighting is so, because it's that area control, it's so just like,
right,
lose a poker chip kind of thing, more than, you know, battle. So, there you go. That is Inish from Madigo Games, and that's what our table, nope, that's what's on our table. Let us know what's on yours. All right, we figured with the holiday season coming up here, it'd be fun to talk about some holiday game ideas. So not things necessarily you would purchase, but actually things you would bring to some of the holiday parties that you're going to. We won't quite make Thanksgiving here, but some people might have some Thanksgivings otherwise that they're going to, some delayed Thanksgivings and whatnot, or just Christmas party that you're going to attend, or mm-hmm. I don't know, if you're like me, I have 8 Christmases that I celebrate every year, so it's good to drag some games out for those. So I thought we would mention some of those things here. So I just thought of a couple. I know this year I'm excited. I'm bringing Time's Up. I think that's going to be really fun to play with the family, my wife's family especially, too. Yeah, it's just one of those games that's just great because everybody understands the concept. Oh, I'm trying to get people to guess this. It can be a little frustrating for people if they don't know what's on the card, but that's part of the game is like, well, just keep working your way through it. We've actually house ruled that you can pass. The game tells you not to pass so that you're kind of forced to sit there for a while. But with that 30-second timer, passing takes 3 seconds to say, do. I feel like you're kind of getting a penalty there anyway, as opposed to like that frustration of just like, I've never heard of this thing and I'm right. stuck on this card. So I've house ruled that in there, and I wouldn't be afraid on games to make those house rules. But then it just Time's Up adds that next layer. Then the next thing, you can only do gestures, but that makes sense. You can only say one word, and then you can only do gestures, but it just makes sense once everybody knows the cards. The other thing we found is the game tells you to play with 40 cards. It seems a little long to get through 3 rounds with 40 cards with 30 seconds. So I think you could either go up to a minute and play with the 40 cards. People would be guessing a lot more. Or just take the 40 cards down, you know, evenly distribute. I think the last time we played with 6 people, we just gave everybody 8 cards, discard 2 down to 6, and now you got 36 cards. Shortens up the game a little bit. I wouldn't be afraid to even go as low as 20 and just make each round take 5-10 minutes, and the whole game is pretty short. But I think that's going to be a pretty good party pleaser if you've got a table to sit around, I think is pretty key for this game. It's a tough couch game. And, you know, you think people would have that like 15 to 30 minutes of time to jump in, but Time's Up is good. You got some holiday games. I know some that you've said you've played with your family.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of in the vein of what I'd be talking about. Yeah, so from my perspective, like, Rachel, my wife, plays a bunch of games, so that's a little bit different than what I'd normally be bringing out to, like, the rest of my family. You know, my brother is a few years younger than I am, but he would play stuff, but besides that, it's really, like, most of the people at the events will be, you know, they'll played, like, the classic games, you know, like Yahtzee, or, like, just, like, some classic, like, trick-taking games, like Setback, or, like, stuff like that. Not the hobby games that we'd be looking into. But, you know, I've gotten to the table a few things. Like Concept has worked really well as, like, an activity. That one's been great. Codenames has been, you know, just, like, an easy one to have for, like, any number of people. You can just set it up and start playing, and that one's really great. I know that one's worked well with, like, with my parents specifically, and I'd like to try it at, you know, some of these other events. Yeah, I'm trying to think. I see you've got Telestrations down. I know that's worked for some groups. I guess I haven't gotten it out for my parents yet. I think my dad would really like it though. Yeah. So I don't know. There are quite a few things out there. I guess my perspective specifically is kind of introducing stuff to people that don't play a lot of the hobby games. So, you know, they're probably going to be better options for people that, you know, have a family full of, you know, hobby gamers or that sort of stuff. But that's kind of where I'm coming from with with stuff for the holidays.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's the key. We have to remember when we're going to family events, it can't be us pushing our agenda. Like, oh, okay, everybody's here for 5 hours, so they all want to play a five-hour game.
Right.
That's not true. There's food, they're seeing family, there's people coming in and out. I mean, it all depends on what your party is, but if you have people that are traveling, there's football, go Cowboys, and all those things going on. And so other people have that kind of on their list, you know. So for me, I think I'm going to my wife's family. Well, I may get there early, but everybody's massively running around the kitchen and trying to get all that stuff together. And if I start setting up a game on the table where they want to have lunch or dinner or whatever, that's not going to go over well. You know, once the football game goes on with the Cowboys, I mean, that's where I want to be. And that's where several people are going to be there, too, watching those games. So I think it's picking the right thing for the crowd. So sticking to a certain time frame, things you know people will like in terms of that. Now, if you know you could try to do some kind of, you know, light Euro over in a corner on another table and there's a group of people there, great. Bring something, you know, bring something light or bring a ticket to ride or something like that. If there's kids there and you could kind of be in charge of entertaining those kids, I know people would be really happy. So that's going to work great. Loop and Chewy, something like that. You bring that out and kids will be playing that forever, you know, those kind of things. You know, I wouldn't be afraid to try something like a Port Royal. I think that's a really good, it's a pretty fast game, and people can pick up on it. You could almost just teach it as you go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I end up teaching it, and I'm like, I should have just taken a turn and then told the next person to take a turn and just taught as we go. That one works really well. And then we've had a lot of success with Mysterium. People love to sit down and do that. They'll kind of grab their coffee, grab their pie, and sit and play Mysterium. And that's great. Again, you don't have to teach Mysterium. You just start playing, and people get it.
Yeah.
As long as the ghost knows what they're doing, you're good. So you could play the ghost, or, you know, if you got two people there, like for me and my wife, you know, she'll play the ghost and I'll just teach everybody how to play, and you could just teach as you go.
Right.
So I think that's going to be key. Teach as you go games are going to be really good. Things like that. Maybe a two-player game. You could just grab Uncle Ted, you know, and sit down with him and play something or whatnot.
Yeah. And I mean, even if it's something like, I don't mind even just playing something that, you know, I wouldn't play with, like, the gaming group or anything. You know, like, if it's, like, apples to apples right. or something like that. Or, like I said, like, the classic games, like Yahtzee or Setback or something like that. You know, I don't mind, especially, like, it would be great to try to get people, like, aware, like, make people aware of what is being made. You know, like, you know, all this creative stuff that people don't necessarily know about. I think that's where, like, we want to share it. We want to get that out there. But, again, like, people kind of have, like, a preconceived notion about what you're talking about a lot of the times. So, just being mindful of that and kind of working out with, like, the dynamics of your family is going to be key.
Yeah. You know, the heading of the title of the show, in my experience, there's no such thing as luck. So I thought it'd be neat to try to pull out some games that aren't heavy on luck, you know, to show people like, oh, every game isn't Yahtzee where you're rolling dice and going off the luck. I didn't do well when I talked about Port Royal, for example. Some people would argue Ticket to Ride there. But, you know, showing people that there's other things behind games that aren't that.
Mm.
But like you said, being very careful, you're not pushing your agenda. You're just saying, oh, here's a game that I really think you guys will like.
Right.
And tailoring it towards what those people will like. I know for me, I'm a hospitality person, so in a game, I'm all about making sure everybody's having fun and everything's going well and those kind of things. If my team doesn't win, it's not a big deal. When it's just me and it's a heavy Euro, I get more upset because I want to do well and I want to think about those things, or I get frustrated with the game on my own. But, you know, when it's kind of that group thing, it's all about that. I love running Wits and Wagers. You know, that's one of my favorite things, doing that. So,
you know, I'll have to grab a bunch of smaller games too. You know, those seem like they'd be easy enough to just sit down for, like, 15 minutes or so, you know, like Love Letter or Red 7 or Hanabi, like stuff like that, where it's like kind of pocket sized. And I guess that kind of gets into more, like, even into the, like, purchasing side of things. Like, a lot of those games are easy for, like, stocking stuffers for people that might not play a lot of games, you know? So, you know, even stuff that's kind of like a little bit large, like For Sale or something like that, has worked well, like, where it's like it's easy to sit down and play, and a lot of the times people are like, oh, that's cool, I hadn't heard of that, or you know, like, they're grateful for trying it out. And then all of a sudden they get it as a gift for the holidays or something like that. And it kind of keeps working to spread the awareness for that. So
yeah, and if your family likes trick-taking games, if they play cards of any sort, you know, then Diamonds is a good one.
Mm-hmm. No Thanks.
No Thanks works really well, yeah, in those minds. That's not really... We've even tried some, like, Little Devils, and we haven't tried Pymal Flum yet, which is going to be Plums from Crash Games, but that's a trick-taking game. You know, where it's the idea of trick-taking, if people play cards, they're used to that, but then it just puts this little twist of like, oh, then this card does this and this card does that. You know, you got to know your audience there a little bit, but that works well. But there's that idea. Yeah, and I think you were right with that when you're talking about gift ideas is, yeah, it's one thing if you could buy a game and then sit and teach it to people, but you got to think about what games you buy for people are things that they're probably going to have to learn. I mean, most likely if you buy somebody a Christmas present, you're going to give it to them, and the party goes, blah, 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 and then people pack up, and they go home, and they take the gift with them, and now they've got to learn it. So I've always done the, feel free to call me, or I could show you a YouTube video for this, or whatever.
Right.
But thinking of those games, so those small box games you were mentioning with a rule sheet in them, where people can get through that works really well. I tried to think of a couple games like that, where I think it's pretty easy, but there's a lot there. If you got a couple that you're giving a game to, I think Lost Cities is just so good for that. Seven Wonders Duel is probably another one that just came to me off the top of my head. I think that book's a little bit thicker and a little more intimidating. The game is pretty easy to play. The little ins and outs of the games I think could be a little intimidating. I think these escape rooms in a box are great gifts to give people, the escape the room stuff. And the Think Fun ones are pretty cheap. They're running like $25, I think. So those are a pretty good gift if you're doing like a Secret Santa, because that's it. The game just teaches you as you play. So those are pretty good. I would caution people. I feel like those escape the rooms, say like 3 to 8 players. If you've got all adults, 3 or 4 players is a maximum to me, because people just don't have anything to do otherwise. So I would try to let people know that. Like if you think you're giving somebody something to play with eight adults, there's some of these bigger escape the rooms. There was a Kickstarter one, and there's some others that are coming out. I think those are pretty good. And Animals on Board, I think, is really good. It's really easy to learn. It looks like a kid's game, so it plays well with families. So if you've got a family you're given, especially a family of 4, because that's what that plays with, I think Animals on Board is a great game this holiday season to give, because it's just got high reward on simple play. And I mean, the whole thing is like 15, 20 minutes. People will inevitably take it all down, set up, and play again. So those are good. So those are kind of our holiday game ideas, both what to bring with you to a party and what to give to people. Many games are available at the portal, whatever we have in stock at a given time. So definitely come check that out. Like I said, the Small Business Saturday is a great day to stop in, and others as well. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. Anything else?
No, nothing to add. I think we hit a lot of topics there. Like, I mean, a good amount of games, a good amount of ideas, just just even showing what our perspective is on what we're doing. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I say, Brian, we take that topic and we put a bow on it.
Moving on.
That was supposed to be the segue.
Oh, I got it.
All right, I don't remember last time we did what we love about .. but we're bringing that one back. This is a little bit from me, but what we love about the Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store. So I don't know how many people are aware listening to this. I don't know how many people listening to this go to the portal and play games there. I don't know how many of you are outside of the New England area and have never been around here. But
so we don't know much.
We don't know anything about you. So write us a short biography. So anyway, we are now sitting in the Time Machine Toy and Hobby. If we look across the street, we can see the portal. So we got 2 stores, same ownership, but 2 kind of different goals. So the portal is the one that has the games, open later at night, tables for people to play, events, all sorts of things going on over there, all in the gaming vein, miniatures, and magic cards, and tournaments, and meetups, and board game library, all that stuff is over in the portal, snacks. And then the Time Machine Toy and Hobby, which existed prior, is across the street here, or where we are, across the street from that. So if you've never ventured over there, I highly recommend you do. Now, this is coming from me, who has come up here since early 2000s and walked through the store a bunch. And then, of course, working around the store, you know, I kind of always joke like, oh, I just run across to grab paper towels or whatever else we're needing or find Brian wherever he is. And I don't really look at the store. And when the Dice Tower crew came up and we brought them through the store, it was like I was walking through the store for the first time in 10 years. And it was just really neat to go at that slower pace, look up and down shelves, notice things in places I hadn't, and just even the building, the feel of the building. So I just highly encourage people, if you haven't, to come on in. There is a large game selection in the Time Machine Toy and Hobby. If you're a hobby gamer and you play heavy games, there probably isn't a lot of games in the Time Machine for you. But there are great family games. There's great kids games. All that Hobba stuff. There's a whole pile of Hobba games, which are so good. And a whole wall, and you've got it all aged out. 2 and up, 3 and up, 4 and up, 5 and up.
It's hopefully aged appropriately. There's a kind of a general semblance of that.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are so many games coming out, and like there's such a rotation, it does.
Right, right.
There might be a mix and match, but yeah, like you're saying, like it's there was some thought that went into it initially.
Yeah, but like the timeline games are over here, and you've got some heavier stuff. I thought Castle Burgundy's over on this side. There was some Bora Bora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just, you know, Harry Potter, Hogwarts Battle is over here. So, you know, family stuff, family oriented. I guess Castle Burgundy and Bora Bora are a little heavier.
No, yeah,
but
those are
just to put some perspective in where those things are. So. And that's just a game section.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go from there, you've got all the Schleich toys. We collect all those, and you've got horses and tractors, toy tractors, and model cars, and remote control cars. I'm going to keep going. Dollhouses. There's all the science kits. There's paint kits. There's a whole section, my daughter loves it, of, you know, do-it-yourself projects and creativity stuff. There's electric cars, and I think I said the trains already. And the train tracks upstairs, and a whole section for little kids and babies of stuff. There's a whole art section. There's educational toys and art supplies for artists. And you can tell us more, Brian. Tell us some of the things that you've dressed up for the holidays or events that people could come to see, some of those things.
Yeah, no, I guess there's just such a wide range of things that are in this building. I guess even coming from that, like each niche within Time Machine has like a long tail where there's going to be like a very fine, like there are a lot of people, I guess not a lot for each one, but there are a good amount of people that bring it through and follow it through down to the hobby aspect of it.
Right.
So, you know, like the model rockets that we have, it's, like we have a lot of that like initial entry point for people, you know, where that's kind of the bread and butter for that section, and then all of a sudden, like there might be people that want to take it to that next step, and you know we don't offer as much for each niche as we could, but we are a resource. You know, if you've got questions on stuff like that, you can come in, ask us about stuff, and you know if it grows to a point where we need to just, you know, bring everything across the board in for something like that, we will. It's just, you know, like I said, like a lot of them have like, you know, a few individuals that kind of bring it all the way out to a point where we're impressed with what they can do.
Mm.
And it's really cool to see people take them and kind of grow with them. Like, I guess we're very invested in the board gaming and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So we see that we're fully like invested in like all these things, and we can kind of get to a point where we think it's a little bit more pervasive than it actually is, you know, because we're aware of it all the time and we see it all the time. But the same could be said about, like, you know, any of those things that you mentioned, you know, even like the slot cars that we carry. Like there's like beginner and intermediate, which we really, I guess I kind of put them in those terms. Like there's Carrera Go, which is like a toy grade sort of thing. It's got like all the licensed stuff. Like we've had like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle sets, or like the Cars movies. Like there's stuff like that where we've got sets that are kind of like into that. And then Carrera Evolution is kind of that next step where you've got realistic stuff. You've got a track. It's kind of like typically like a loop or something like that, just around, and you're driving, you're racing cars like in that vein. And then we only carry a couple of the like the next step up, which are the digital sets, where all of a sudden now you're controlling the car itself, so they can like the cars can switch lanes and do all this crazy stuff, and you can keep track of like your car specifically and have like a lap counter, and you know, it gets to a point where some people will take it to that level.
Right.
Not everyone that's walking through the door wants to, you know, a lot of times we cater more toward the families that, you know, do want that, the beginning of it, and then if, you know, if some people in that group want to take it to the next level, they can, but I think we're kind of a gateway in a lot of different a lot of different hobbies here. So, and I we even tailor like a lot of our events to that, you know, like we've had like a Carrera day for slot cars. We had a Briar day where we were doing all these different like crafts based on like Briar horses, which again, like I had no idea that those even existed before being, you know, working at the store and stuff, but there's a niche. There are people that collect, you know, Briar horses, and you know, there's just like that hobby that, you know, could fly under the radar for a lot of people. So even as you were mentioning, like the Schleich animals, like, you know, those have that collectible aspect. They also work for like projects and like for school projects and whatnot. The model trains have been around for so long. We run the club that's been working on it for the past like 20 some odd years or whatever comes in typically twice a month. If you're hearing this now during the holiday season, like between Thanksgiving and Christmas, they'll be running it every Sunday from 1 to 4.
Come in and see.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's one of the best parts of the store. It's open on Sundays from 1 to 4. What a great thing. Grab your family, you know, go out, do whatever, shopping or do a lunch, come over, take the kids and see that train setup. It's so cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Keep going.
Yeah. The remote control section has been wonderful. We've got a great head of that department, Steve, up in the RC section. If you've got any questions about anything RC related, you know, check with him, because he's been great. He does a lot more from the flying end of the hobby, where so even within RC there's like ground, there's like cars, trucks, all that sort of stuff, and even that splits off to like, you know, racing or rock climbing, like that sort of stuff. Then there's also boats, which is a little bit like a smaller niche, I think, especially around here. But then you get into the aircraft, you know, it started off where it was like planes and helicopters, and now it's even getting into the drones. So I know a lot of the guys have been doing like some of the FPV drones, where you've got like goggles and you're controlling the drones, and like from like a GoPro, basically, from on the drone, and you're racing around like this closed course typically. So
that's crazy.
Yeah, it's impressive. I got to try on the goggles recently. Like there was someone in doing like a demo. We have like a couple hula hoops set up around like the top of the, like it's a high ceiling. Uh-huh. So we've got some hula hoops set up, and you know, if someone's around that could show you, just ask. And, you know, maybe there's a chance you could see it, but I don't know. I don't want to guarantee it. It's not going to be every single time someone walks in that they can see that, but it's worth trying it out. It's definitely got that like roller coaster sort of feel, where the guy that handed me the FPV goggles said, you know, put your hand down on something to stabilize yourself, because this is your first time. So some people even get kind of lightheaded, or like, you know. There's a lot to that too, and I don't know. It's impressive. There are so many things. I know I haven't touched on all of them, but like I said, it's nice to see people come in, even if it's not like we can bring people all the way up to the like extreme hobby level.
Right.
We can still guide people, and you know, we're that meeting place a lot of times, and people can kind of take it and grow within a certain area. So.
Yeah, so I highly encourage. I mean, obviously, people listening to this are board games and miniatures games and war games and RPGs and all that kind of stuff, I presume. But, you know, take a gander. Come across the street here. Check out Time Machine Toy and Hobby. You'll become a kid again yourself. If you're an adult, you'll just find you'll just find something that you grew up with that you love. Another thing I appreciate, like obviously there's electronics with RC and stuff like that, but the store mostly focuses on hobby-based things. So they're mostly things that you do with other people. They're not, you know, or that you could teach your kids to do with you, and there's not really a large selection of like video games and other stuff like that. So I think it's really neat. It's very, you know, homegrown, and you work on it and do something with other people and get involved. So yeah, just come across. This is what I love about Time Machine Toyonami. Brian does too. I think he wouldn't work here if he didn't have a love for all these things. But I think it's like you've said, you've in working here, you've just learned to grow to love so much of those things and see just right. how much more you can bring to people's hobbies and that kind of stuff and right. make those connections. So.
And yeah, it's very rewarding to see all those people come in.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there are going to be good and bad days at any job, but those good moments are just like, it's just really nice to see families come in and really just get like be in awe of what there is and kind of what we're helping support. And then just getting that positive feedback is just very refreshing. And especially now it's really like, it's kicking into the busy season for us. So there's going to be a lot of like, you know, it's going to be stressful for a lot of people. It's going to be very active and very busy, but you know, it's always rewarding to see people leave with like a smile.
Yeah.
So
nice. Yeah. So, come on out, check it out. You know, come support the store, see if there's something you could buy either for yourself or for somebody for the holidays. There's just awesome gifts idea here from 0 to 99. So it's just, you know, even though it's a toy store, we think of that for kids. Just like we know with board games, and people are like, there's board games for adults. You know, there's tons of great hobby stuff over here and toy stuff. So that is what we love about the Time Machine Toy and Hobby. All right, there we go. That is episode number 33. In my experience, there's no such thing as luck. Before we go, Brian's going to run us down some new things on the horizon coming out to the store that we can be excited about.
Yeah, so it looks like a few things are going to be kicking in, especially with like Black Friday approaching. So we've got the Brettspiel Advent Calendar from 2016. We should have a few of those coming in, so that's exciting.
Promos.
Yeah, so that's just an advent calendar with board gaming related items. So along with that, we're going to be getting in some of the copies of the AEG Black Box.
Oh, nice.
Which is a complete game in and of itself. So I don't know, I haven't really looked into how it plays out or whatnot, but it sounds like it's intriguing at least. It's neat that they're doing this, and you know, hopefully there's a good response there. So along with that, we will be getting another Lord of the Rings LCG expansion. I believe it's a big box this time. The Sands of Harad Deluxe Edition. Yeah, so that one will be coming out. Shadows of Brimstone Deluxe Otherworld expansion as well. That'll be coming out as well. Civilizations will be coming out shortly. Nice. From... Is that...
Grana, and then is it Passport?
They should have looked that up. Sorry.
Civilizations is coming out.
Along with Pocket Madness from the same company. We've got, let's see, The Blood of an Englishman from Renegade Game Studios. I don't know a ton about that, but Renegade has been really
fire.
Good.
Yeah.
A few games from Stronghold, The Fog of War and Jorvik. Hopefully we'll be getting Great Western Trail. I'm not exactly sure. That seemed like there was a little bit of a... Like, it seemed like the numbers were kind of tight on that. Some copies of like River Dragons, Rune 25, and Ultimate Warriors will be coming out from a new company. I don't know if they kind of split off a little bit from Asmodee, but those will be coming out. Guilds of London is finally in from Tasty Minstrel Games, along with Ars Alchemia, Orleans Invasion Expansion. I guess just those three. So yeah, those will be coming out shortly as well. Let's see if there's anything else to highlight. So we're going through the invoices right now. last Friday, we had run that event recently, right. So that'll be coming out finally. It looks like we've got a copy of Conan as well. And then, you know, just a few other things, some like War Machine items and some WizKids stuff as well. But, Pandemic the Cure Experimental Meds, that'll be coming out. That's really the fun expansion for that. So, yeah, that one looks exciting. I'd like to pick that up. I know... I really enjoyed Pandemic the Cure, but it's been a little while. It definitely could use some more to it. So
yeah,
definitely. I'm excited for that.
Awesome. So those are new things coming out. Check them out. We hope to see you this holiday season coming by the store. If you're coming to the New England area, listen to the podcast, stop in, say hi, check us out. Thanks so much for listening. This has been episode number 33 of the Portal Gaming Podcast. I am your host, The Brant.
And I'm your co-host, Brian.
And we hope you step into the portal. Portal Gaming Podcast is a product of Time Machine Toy and Hobby Store / The Portal, which is located at 71 and 60 Hilliard Street in Manchester, Connecticut. This episode was recorded on November 23rd, 2016. Happy Thanksgiving. Please send any questions to us at portalgamingpodcast@gmail.com. Portal Gaming Podcast is also a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. For more awesome podcasts, visit www.dicetowernetwork.com. Thanks for listening.